All right, let's go ahead and get started. Thank you all for coming out. I know there's a lot of sessions that you can choose from, so thank you for coming here. Looks like we're fully utilizing this large room that they gave us, so thank you. My name is Harrison Shapley. I'm a program manager on the Access product team, and today we're going to talk about developing SharePoint apps with Access 2013. So let me see hands if you attended our session yesterday, because it makes a difference in how I give the presentation. All right, so about half of you. All right, that doesn't help. Okay, so you guys are going to see a lot of the same content that you saw yesterday, and for the rest of you, it'll be new, and I might go through it a little faster than we did yesterday, so hopefully I'll try and bridge that gap. So what I'm going to talk about today is I'm going to introduce Access 2013 and the brand new Access Services Architecture, how that all works. I'm going to show you how to build an app in under 60 seconds, and also going to show you a little bit of the more advanced features for customizing your app, including some macros. And if there's only a few things that you take away from today, it's that Access 2013 creates SharePoint web apps that run on the web with a SQL backend. These apps are centrally managed and secure. They're much easier to manage than Access apps of days of yore. And anyone can create these apps. You don't need any coding knowledge at all. So, why are we here talking about Access? Well, it's actually, we recently passed 20 years that Access has been around. And there's a reason why that's the case, that we're still around, and that's because people will always have a need for structured data. So Excel is a great tool for managing unstructured data, but sometimes there are things that are relational, structured, and Access really helps managing those types of things by creating custom apps on top of that. So as I said, it's been around for a while, and all the versions before Access 2013 used desktop database files. And basically, the data was stored in a local file. Users could share this file directly through email attachments with their coworkers. And the Access was both the runtime and the design time, basically. You could run the apps in there, and you could modify the apps. These desktop databases, they're still fully supported in Access 2013. But we've also introduced a new concept of web apps. And so we really think that this is where the future is. And so basically, it's using a lot of the new technology. It's running on the web within SharePoint. It inherits a lot of the features from SharePoint. And it has full SQL Server on the back end. If you're in the cloud, that'll be SQL Server on Windows Azure. Or if you're on premises, that's just SQL Server. And these apps are always stored on the web. And so in order to share it with someone, all you need to do is give them a URL. So there are lots of solutions out there for managing your data, but they generally fall into one of these two categories. Either they're a simple solution like Excel, and it's very easy to get started, very easy to iterate upon that app, but unfortunately, they tend to work with unstructured data, and so you can end up with... Or if they're simple, I mean, they may still be structured data, but what happens is you end up with multiple versions of the data, and it's hard to keep the data clean. And so then the structured solutions, they solve those problems. There's only one version of the truth. It's easy to keep the data clean, and you can also do very easy and powerful analysis on top of that. But unfortunately, those structured solutions tend to cost a lot, be hard to learn, be hard to evolve those. So we think that Access finds a nice sweet spot between these two solutions, and it sort of brings together the benefits of both while trying to avoid the pitfalls. So this is a diagram of essentially the developer continuum. On one end, you have the pro developers, and on the other end, you've got the power user, also known as the information worker or solutioneer sometimes. And with Access 2013, we were starting to get more towards the pro developer side with previous versions of Access. And historically, it's really been a tool for anyone to be able to create their own solutions. So we wanted to move it back down as far as we could. We wanted to get it, like, over here somewhere, and we're getting there. But with Access 2013, we're squarely under the power user as far as like ability that you need in order to create these apps. There's, of course, other tools out there for building apps for SharePoint. Napa, you may have heard of, is sort of a lightweight development environment on the web. And then, of course, Visual Studio is the gold standard in development tools. The bars in the middle is showing you that you can use all three of these tools to develop apps for SharePoint. Access apps are apps for SharePoint. And then you can also build apps for Office with the other tools. I'll explain the difference between those two later as well. So to go over, I'll briefly go over the three components of the new web apps. As you can see here, there's basically SQL on the back end, SharePoint where it's running, and then you've got the sort of the front end, the new app model. And so I'll go through each of these in a little more detail. The new app model that we have, it's very easy to get up and running. We take care of all the UI for you. We looked through a bunch of Access databases that were created in the past, and a lot of the effort was spent creating the navigation and the UI. And the people building these apps, they weren't necessarily designers. And so we think that we're helping quite a lot by auto-generating a really nice navigation UI experience for you. And it's also very easy to get started. So we have what are called table templates. You'll see those in a second. You basically just search for what you want to track, and it'll give you suggestions related to what you searched for. And as when you select one of those, it just brings in all the schema, all the relationships. You get all the views automatically generated for you. And so it's very easy to get up and running. And it's also very easy to customize as well, because you can just drag and drop to build your forms and add your custom business logic. It's all very easy. And so I'll go a little bit more detail into the UI later on after I've done a demo. Second part is that we're now running within SharePoint. So I'm probably going to say this many times, but Access apps are SharePoint apps. And so there's lots of great things that we get from SharePoint. You can see a list of many of them here. But basically, you're getting the permissions from SharePoint. You're getting the centralized control, all sorts of great things. Plus, since it's running on the web, it's very easy to collaborate. You've already got your team site, probably. And so anyone who's on that site, they can just browse to that app very easily. And then the third part, of course, is that we now have full SQL Server on the back end. So this is completely vanilla SQL. And on the cloud, we're running SQL Azure and on-premises SQL Server. And so this is great that we moved to SQL, because we've gotten all the benefits of it. The speed, the reliability, and, of course, the scalability is way better than the desktop databases that we had before. And if you're familiar with SQL, you're going to love this, because you can integrate with any application. You can build a custom one, Excel for reporting. It's very easy to just connect to that SQL Server directly and work with that data. And I'll show a little bit more about that with a demo later. So let's go ahead and actually show you building an app in 60 seconds. It might take a little longer than 60 seconds because I'm talking, but I promise that it's possible. So here I've got a team site. Yesterday we showed creating an app through the Access desktop client, but there's many ways that you can create an app. So here I'm going to show you a method through SharePoint. So if I go to Site Contents, I can click Add an App, and there's all the types of apps that are available to you down here. I'm going to sort by name just to make it a little bit faster. And the first one here is Access App. So I'm going to go ahead, say that I want to add an Access app. And what kind of app should I create? Well, I've been in Madrid here for a while now, and there was a pretty crazy office party last night that I'm still recovering from. So I think I need to start to take stock of all the drinks that I've been having. So I'm going to create a consumption log app. And now what it's going to do, you see it's added here and it's working on adding it. What it's doing now is it's actually going out and it's provisioning a SQL database for you. There's one SQL database for every app that it runs on top of. And so it's generating all of the SharePoint code that it needs. It's getting that database ready on the back end. And now it's already done. I'm going to go take a look at it. And since I created a brand new app, it's going to be completely blank. I haven't added anything yet. So we added this helpful little screen here to say, you don't have anything, so please open it in Access to get started. So I'm going to go ahead and open this up in Access. It's going to pull down the app definition from the server. And then you're brought immediately to our new add table experience, which is very simplified. There's just a big box right here asking you, what do you want to track? And so in this case, I'm creating a consumption log app. So what I want to do is I want to track my drinks. So I'm going to search for drinks to see if there's anything that might be helpful. So this is great because I've already got a few results. As I explained before, we call these table templates. And basically, they have predefined schema and the table relationships. The little icon on the left here is showing that there's actually multiple tables that would come in with that one. There's also ones that are just a single table. And so it looks like consumption log is going to be the best for me. And so it's going to go take a look at that schema and bring all of that into my app specifically. And here, I've already got four tables in my app. And the relationships between them, and the UI is automatically generated, the schema, everything. So I'm actually already have a fully functioning app and all ready to go. So if I go up to the ribbon here, click Launch App, and now I'll be able to see the app that I created, theoretically, in 60 seconds. And so now I'm going to go through some of the UI elements that you get automatically. On the left is basically all the tables that you have in your app, and so that would be the first thing that you would select. So let's say in this case I want to see, there's an error, great. So in this case I'm going to take a look at the items table, and then across the top you get the views for that table. And so the different ones get different ones by default, but you're always going to get a list view and a data sheet view. And, still getting an error. Great. So in this case, with the items, it had a lookup to the categories table. And so it detected that there was, or since it was the predefined schema, it knew that you're probably going to want to view your items by category. So this third one, by category, is what's called a summary view. That's the third type of view that we have. And that's going to group the items together by their category and show you how many you have in each. And if I go back here, once you've selected the view, in this case it's the list view, down the left you have all the list items. Now, since we haven't added anything, it's kind of hard to see. So I've actually created another app that is exactly the same as the one that we just got from the table templates. It's exactly the same in every way except that I've added some data because it's a little bit easier to explain the UI elements if there's some data in there. So in here, you can see all of my consumption log entries. So the date is shown here and the drink. And so this is the list details view as I talked about before. And what I can do is I can also filter the list with this filter control, and it's actually pretty, it's sort of a search and filter, and it's pretty powerful because it can look through all the details in through relationships even. So if I only want to see stouts, I'll do a search there and get an error. And there's five different times where I had some kind of stout. On the right you see the details, and so these are the different fields that you get. And then across the top is what we call the action bar. And so these are the common actions that you're always going to need to do in your app. There's add a new record, delete, edit, save, and cancel. And so these are going to switch depending upon the context. And you can even add your own custom action bar buttons if there's something that's an action that's commonly going to be done in your app. And I'll actually show that later. So let me switch back over. And to recap, it was very, very easy for me to get started and create that app. There was only a few things that I had to do. I showed you starting from SharePoint, in which case I just said add an app and created a blank Access app and then started adding the tables there. You can also do it through the Access client. You just say create custom web app, and then you give the location, the URL of your SharePoint site. I typed in that I wanted to track my drinks, and so it gave me some suggestions based on that, and I was able to automatically get all the schema and views generated for me. And then I could just view it straight from there. So it's very easy and very fast to get up and running. You also get all these UI elements that I described automatically. To recap, you start by choosing the table. Then you choose the view. On the list view, you're going to have the search and filter on the list there. And then you've got the action bar across the right, and you've got the details for editing a record. Here are some of the controls that we have. So when it has a lookup to another table, it's going to detect that. And so by default, it's going to use an autocomplete control, which is similar to a dropdown, except that it works better for a lot of records, so that you just start typing, shows you anything that's has those letters in it from the related table right away. And then if you haven't actually added that record yet, you have a nice little ability to just click add a new item right there while you're editing your form and add that new one. And then once you save that, it'll pipe it through. The data sheet view, I didn't show that, but it's your simple spreadsheet type view. It's very good for bulk data entry or bulk data changing. And also it's a very good way to just copy and paste a bunch of data, like from a spreadsheet. There's also drill through and pop-ups. So whenever there's a relationship and you're in a view mode on a form, the related item in a different table is going to change to a link. And when you click that link, you'll get a pop-up right away that shows you the details about that particular record in the other table. And this can sort of go infinitely if there's related records in each one. So there's the summary view that I mentioned. That's going to group things by category from a related table and show you how many are in each category. And there's just a simple list of the records that are in that category on the right. The related items control, it'll also detect when you have a relationship the other way, and it'll put a related items control on the form for that. And that shows all of the records in the related table from that particular record. And it also gives you a link to right there, it says add contacts, so you can just add new entries to that related table right from there. You can also modify the related items control just like anything else, adding new tabs, things like that. And the action bar I mentioned, these have your common actions, add, delete, update, your CRUD operations. And you can add custom buttons to that as well. So now I'm going to show you a little bit more about the design experience. So far I just used the table templates, but really where Access shines is when you customize the app. So I'm going to start by showing you an app that I created beforehand that I added a little bit more, made it a little bit nicer for the actual use of the consumption log app. So in this case, I thought about how I would want to use the consumption log, and really what I would want to do is select the drink first and then just say that I drank this and then add the other details at that point. So in this case, I start by selecting the type of drink and then the specific drink, and then I see the details for it and I can click the giant I drank this button. This is something that might have been maybe normally you would expect to build this with cascading combo boxes, and that is a feature that's forthcoming. But in this case, I just used a list view embedded inside a list view in order to get the same functionality. And I kind of like how it looks because I still get the thumbnails and everything. So let's pick one of these and let's say that I drank this. And it's going to, I hooked up some custom logic here to pipe through the drink that I had clicked on into the what did you drink field. And so I just need to fill out when I drank it. So I'm remembering, my trackpad sucks. I'm remembering something that I drank yesterday. And so I'm going to select yesterday. That was at the restaurant, I think that was called Kaaba. And so I had three of those. So I'm going to save that, and that's going to add an entry to my consumption log. So let's go ahead and take a look at this in the Access Design Time, the desktop client. And so here I've got the three tables. I changed this one to be welcome, so because you're going to be starting by selecting your drink, but the user can also check all the drinks that they have or just the raw consumption log data as well. And the way that I got that, I said before, it was a list view embedded inside a list view. So just to show you very quickly how I did that, this is a standard list view, and so the first list control is the one that I've set to be the data source is the drinks, and I'm showing, or it's the categories actually, and I'm showing all the categories in that. And then here, I have a subview control, so you're not really seeing anything because it's just subview. And that you would get to through here, subview. These are the different controls that you have available to you. You can either use the ribbon like this to drag the controls into the form, or you can also look on the right here, and it'll show you all of the fields that are in the table that you're working with, and you can just double-click or drag those in, and it'll bring in the appropriate type of control for that. So this subview, all I had to do was specify the view that it was showing. In this case, it was the drinks list, so the overall one, of course, was the categories, and then this one was the drinks list, and so it's going to automatically filter that down once I've selected the top one, because that's how I did the linking the master and the child field there. So as I was creating this app, if you look back at the one that we got automatically, it included a context table that was related to the rest, but I didn't really understand it, so I got rid of that. But now I realize that I probably shouldn't have done that, because what I really want to do is record the people that I drink with when I add an entry to my consumption log. So I'm going to add a drinking buddies table back to my app. So you go to the same screen that we saw before when we had the blank app. And in this case, I'm going to search for people. And there's a bunch of results. These ones are single tables, as you can see. And so they just have slightly different schema depending upon the type of people that they are. But I'm just going to use the regular people table template on this one. And people, it's not really very helpful, so I'm going to call that drinking buddies. And now what I need to do is I need to create a relationship between the consumption log table and the drinking buddies table so that I can actually record who I was with when I drank somewhere. And so I'm going to just double click on the consumption log. And here I'm brought into the table designer. And so I see all the fields that I have and all their types, very easy to use. And so I'm just going to add a new field here, which is drinking buddy. It's going to default to short text, but what I want is a lookup. And you have two options when you select lookup. One is that you can just define a predefined list of things. So in this, like, we have a rating on here, and that's just a 1 through 5, so I'm going to type in 1 through 5 ahead of time. But in this case, I'm actually looking up to another table in my app. I'm going to look into the people table, and I want to be a little bit more helpful than first name. So let's see. There's a display name, which is a calculated field that's going to use an expression to add to concatenate first name and last name so that it looks a little bit nicer. And so that's what I'm going to display when the user selects it. And then I can also choose the delete behavior. So I can either, I have three options. I can just prevent deleting a record if there's a related record. I can delete the corresponding records, or I can just sort of leave it in a weird state by leaving the records even once the other one has been deleted. So I'm going to leave it as the default of just preventing delete. And now I'm going to save this. It's going to submit those changes up to the web. And then the one final piece that I need is that I need to add an actual control to my form in order to specify the drinking buddy. If you hadn't modified your form, like this one I got straight from a table template, and you can see that it's added a relic down here, a related items control down here at the bottom, because I added that relationship and it detected that. So it automatically added the related items control to that one. But in the case of the consumption log, I've already modified my form, and so it's not going to make any sort of assumptions about what it should do. And so it's up to me now to add a new control now that I've added a new field. So here I see Drinking Buddy, the new field that I added. And if I just double-click on that, it's going to bring in the correct kind of control. In this case, it's an autocomplete control. And then I can just resize. I could drag this around if I want. But I'm going to leave it there. And now I have all the Drinking Buddy functionality. Let's launch the app again. And I need to actually have someone in here. So my co-presenter from yesterday who went home already, I drank with him. So I'm going to add him. And now if I were to add a new consumption log entry, I'd be able to specify the drinking buddy. So here's the one that I added before from yesterday, and I actually drank with Kevin, so I want to add that. So I'm going to go and edit my form, and I just start typing Kevin, and he comes up automatically. And of course, I could add a new entry if they weren't already there. So there, I'm going to select Kevin, click Save. Now it turns into a link, so here's the drill through that I mentioned before, that then shows all the details of the individual record that's related there. So that's a little bit of what you can do to modify your app. Yes? Yeah. What do you mean? So the question was about whether when you do the lookup field, whether it's getting the ID. So on the back end, it's getting the ID. But what's nice is that you're able to choose like the display value. So in this case, I chose full name, so that was a little bit easier. You could have it be the ID if you wanted to do that, but you could have it also be any other type of field that you wanted to look it up by. Really, you're looking up a record in that table, which has all those fields, but you do specify the field that you want to look up by, basically. So I don't think that in this case, when I added Kevin to it, I wouldn't have been able to. I might have been able to type an ID, but I wouldn't have been able to type like his phone number or something like that. It's the one that is tied to. Yeah. So I'm not sure. I don't think I did this in this case, but you can always open the app in the desktop client in the design time by clicking the little gear icon in the upper right and clicking Customize and Access. In this case, I had it open already, but that if you click that, it'll just bring down the definition and you can start editing it. Once you're in the designer, I didn't use it in this case since it wasn't sufficiently complicated enough yet, but there's the navigation pane, which you might be familiar with if you use previous versions of Access, but it basically shows everything that's in your app. So it shows all the tables, all the views, and then also any queries that you have saved and any macros that you have saved. And so you can bring that up if there gets to be a lot and you need to find everything. I've already showed you a few times the ad table experience, and a couple things that I didn't mention about that is that you can of course add a blank table, or you know, a table from scratch that you just define all the fields right there. If there's not a table template for you, or you just don't want to deal with it, then you always have that option. You can also create a table from an existing data source. So maybe you have an Excel spreadsheet or a previous version of Access desktop database that you want to bring into a web app, and SQL Server, you can link to a SharePoint list. Then here are all the things that you can create. So far, I've described some of the views, like a list view, data sheet view, summary view. You can also create a blank view. You just set the data source on that, and then you can put the controls in that you want. So a lot of people have used those to create like dashboards and that kind of thing. You can create queries, macros, and we have two kinds of macros. We have user interface macros, so those are ones that are going to fire when the user interacts with the app in some way. And then there's data macros, which just run on the data. So they run on the back end, and they return some sort of results. And then you can also set there's a couple of specific types of ones, like on start or an onload macro and those kinds of things. So let me describe macros in a little bit more detail. Like I said, there's two kinds. There's UI macros and data macros. So UI macros are used for a few different types of things. They can be used for app navigation. So oftentimes, if you have a button, you would want to have that navigate somewhere, that kind of thing. It can also be used for sort of filling in default values for various controls or doing validation. You also have built-in options for validation as well. And then you can also call data macros with UI macros. And these UI macros, we separated the two. So the UI macros cannot directly manipulate data, but they can manipulate the controls that are on the form that you're currently viewing. And these ones cannot iterate on the record set, but data macros are. You have a couple options for debugging these macros as well. You can check the exceptions, and you can also use MessageBox. So MessageBox is one of the type of UI macros. It just pops up a basic message box like built into the operating system. And so you could just put that into your macro at various points if you want to see how it's progressing while you're building that macro. And if you want to know what they're turned into on the back end, they're converted straight into JavaScript. So if that gives you a better idea of what UI macros are. Data macros, on the other hand, they run within a transaction in SQL, and they're converted into SQL triggers and stored procedures. So that should hopefully give you a little bit better idea about the difference between them. Data macros are useful in a few different ways. So you can do sort of bulk data operations if you want to do that. You can do a little bit more complex data validation. You can iterate on records. You can do anything that you would want to check. Usually it's around aggregating data or that kind of thing. These ones cannot interact with the UI. You'd want to use UI macros for that. And then your options for debugging on here are you can actually view a tracing table. And I'll show that in a little bit. And then just a little hint here, raise error, actually what it does is it creates a message box, sort of like if you had created a message box with a UI macro. So let's show you how these macros all work together. So let's go back to this app that I've been working on. And I'm starting to use it more. I like it. But there's a feature that's missing that I want to add. And that feature is that I want to check whether I've had a few too many drinks for today and whether I need to stop or not. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a button that's going to check how many drinks I've had for the day and then tell me whether I'm over the limit or not. So this is going to use both a data macro and a UI macro. So I'm going to actually start with the data macro because the UI macro is going to call the data macro. So I'm going to show the navigation pane just because I'm going to be adding a saved macro on here. So let's start by creating the data macro. And so here's the macro builder that you can see. And you have a drop-down box where you can select what you want to do for that next step, and that's always there in order to add new steps. You can also use the ribbon up here for to do the tracing and the trace table and that kind of thing. On the right are all of the available actions that you have for data macros. So you can use either of these methods, the navigation pane on the action pane on the right, or this drop-down menu here. The parameters, there's a way that you can pass in parameters to the data macro, but in this case we don't need to do that, so I'm not going to use that. So basically, the data macro that I'm going to create, it needs to go through the consumption log. It needs to find all of the records that are actually recorded as being on today's date, and then it needs to add all of those up, and it needs to return the total number of drinks for that day. So in order to do that, I'm going to start with a for each record, because I want to go through each record and I want to add the quantity to the total. So I want to look up in the consumption log, so I just start typing, and it brings up consumption log right away. And then here I'm going to define my where condition, so the records that I want to find in consumption log. So once again, I'm going to start typing. And so I start with the table, consumption log, and then I'm just going to press dot because I want to get a particular field in it, and it already shows you all the fields that are there. And so all I have to do is just say drink date, excuse me, and then I want to say where the drink date equals today. And so there's a function for today. It doesn't need any parameters. So there, I'm already done with my where condition. I want to find all of the entries in consumption log where the date is defined as today. And so what do I want to do when I find a record that is recorded as today? What I want to do is I want to add to the total value of all the drinks that I've had for that day. So I want to set a local variable. In this case, I'll just call it numDrinks. And I want to actually increment numDrinks by the number of drinks that are in this particular record. So if you've done some coding before, it should be very easy. I want to set numDrinks equal to the previous value of numDrinks plus the actual quantity from that record. So in that case, I just need to say the name of the field, which is quantity. And so there I have the expression, but now I realize that I never actually initialized numDrinks. It needs to start at zero and then go from there. That's perfectly fine. I'll add a new overall, top level action here. Set local variable again. Still called numDrinks, but in this case we just want to set it to equal to zero. And I want this to be the first step, so I can just drag and drop this up to the top to make that be the correct order that I want. So here my data macro is coming along now. I set numDrinks equal to zero at the beginning. Then I go through all of the records in consumption log where the date is today, and I add the quantity of drinks from that record to the total. There's only one more step that I need to do, which is to return this total. So I'm going to now set the return variable, which the UI macro will then use, because this is going to be called from a UI macro. So I'm going to call it something a little bit different. Let's say numDrinks return, just to show that it's different. And it's just equal to numDrinks after that loop has already run. So now my data macro is all set. I'll just save that, but in this case I need to actually save it and give it a name. So what this macro is doing is it's actually just getting the total drinks for the current day. So I could potentially use it in other places in my app. So I'll call it total drinks today. And now in the navigation pane, I see total drinks today. So now I need to add the UI macro that calls the data macro. So first, I want to make sure I'm in my consumption log table. I'm going to edit that view. And then I could put a button on the form itself, but in this case, it's an action that's running on the whole table, and it might be a pretty common action. So I'm going to actually add a custom action bar button. And so I'll give that a little bit of a tooltip. Am I over the limit? And then I'm going to set the UI macro. So in this case, I want the UI macro to be fired when the user clicks this button. So right here you see it would show all, for various controls, it shows all the actions that are available for that control. So in this one, it has one, which is on click. And so I want to define a UI macro when the user clicks that button. And so it's the same exact macro builder that you saw before. It's just for a little bit different type. And so you have different actions that are available on the right and in the drop-down menu. So the first thing we want to do when the user clicks this button is we want to call that data macro that we defined before. So here I found one called run data macro, very simple. And I called it, what did I call it? A total drinks today, yes. So I just start typing, brings up total drinks. And then what's cool about this is it will actually go into that data macro and it'll find out whether it's going to return a variable or not. So if it wasn't going to return any value, then it wouldn't even show you this box right here. But here it's showing me even the name that I gave it there, numdrinks return, so I remember, oh yeah, that's what it's giving me back. It's giving me the number of drinks for the day. So I'm going to set that as a local variable to hang on to it, and I'll call it numdrinks again because I'm not very creative. So now that we've run that data macro and we have that value back from it, we know that the total number of drinks for the day, and now we need to check whether it's over the limit or not. So that's going to be it's adding a little bit of logic here. So it's going to add a conditional branch here. So I'm going to say if numDrinks is greater than, and then let's see, what would be a reasonable limit for the number of drinks? I'll just hard code it as, let's say, 7. So if it's over the limit, then what I want to do is I'll just send a message to the user saying that you're over the limit. But in this case, I also want to make it a little bit nicer. I want to show them how many drinks that they've had, just so they know how much over the limit they are. So in that case, I'm actually going to use an expression to generate this message. And so I'm going to start with an equals sign there. And then I'm going to use the concat function to put these strings together. And I'm going to say, you're over the limit. And then also, you've already had, and I'm going to combine that with the value of numDrinks. And then just to finish it off, you've had that many drinks. So that's the message that'll pop up. But then I also want to tell them if they're under the limit, I want them to know that as well. So over here you can see a link that's add else. And so if they're not over the limit, then I'll just send them a different message. So same thing, message box. And in this case, I'll just say, you're good to go. And so that's my UI macro. All I needed to do was run the data macro and get the result from it, which was the total number of drinks for the day. And then I check whether the user is over the limit or not, and I give them a message depending upon the result. So if I did this correctly, I will hope that I did. Remember to save the form as well, by the way. When you add a macro to that, you need to save the macro before you close it, and then you also want to save the form so that it's stored on there. So I'm going to go ahead and launch the app again, which will just have it browse to that URL. And here I'm on the consumption log table, and here's my new action bar button. And so let's see if I'm over the limit for today. Oh no, I'm over the limit. I've already had 9 drinks, so that's not good. Well, you know, now that I think about it, I didn't really have four drinks. I mean, they were pretty small. I was more like, I don't know. I was more like one drink. So let's run it again. Oh, I'm good to go. Yay. So that's just a little bit of macros to show you how they work and the difference between UI macros and data macros. Yes. You can. You can get the current user's name and also their email. I think those are the two things you can get. And then also, I wanted to show you the tracing. So this is kind of cool because what it's doing is it's actually always, you can turn on tracing, and if you've turned on the macro tracing, then it's always recording every action that's going on. So I'm going to turn that on, and then let's see, I'll go run it again. So am I over the limit? Oh, I'm good to go. And now if I click View Trace Table, it's actually going to go to a custom little HTML page that shows a data sheet of all those records that it's been recording. And so this is a really good way to debug your macros. If you're having trouble with them, you can go through and see every single thing that's happening. And so in this case, I can see each thing that happened as it went through. And it went through consumption log with this where clause, and it found each of the records that had the date of today, and it added the quantity that you're seeing there. So like this one was 1, this one was 3, this one was 2, and it was adding it to num drinks. Here you can see num drinks total going up, 1, 4 to 6, and then it's returning 6. And so I can see that my macro is running correctly here, and you'd also be able to find various problems. So that's a cool little feature. If you're having a little bit of trouble with your macros and you want to see exactly what's gone wrong and how to fix it. All right, so continuing on, I want to talk a little bit about the architecture. So viewing, running, using the app is all done through the web browser, which is really nice because you can just, anyone can use it. We've tested it on all the major browsers, so they should always just work with whoever you're working with. The Access client is there for what we call the design time for customizing the app, and we've shown a few of the things you can do there. So then the app itself runs on SharePoint, and in this case, for the demos we've been showing, that's SharePoint on Office 365, so it's in the cloud. And then there's another layer that runs on top of SharePoint that's our Access services, and that's what manages and serves up the HTML and JavaScript, which is the actual, the app itself. And then on the back, as I've mentioned, is SQL. And in this case, it's SQL Server on Windows Azure. But keep in mind that you could also be on-prem. So the workflow for this would be that the Access client can create the app on SharePoint. The web browser, of course, consumes the app. And then the SharePoint app, whether you're editing the schema through the Access client or it's just going and accessing the data while you're using it, it's gonna communicate both those things through SharePoint to the SQL database. So as I said, if this were on-premises, then the architecture would look like this. It would be SharePoint that you're running on-premises and then SQL Server 2012 on the back end. And I'd like to point out that this is real SQL, vanilla SQL. It's unobscured table names. If you went into SQL Server Management Studio, you'd be able to see all the tables in your app with their common names. So in this case, if my table is named Drinks, you would see Drinks right there. You'd be able to run queries on that, all that sort of thing. In order to get access to that database on the back, you would go into the File menu and give access there. I'll show that in a second. Basically, you just say enable connections to my database, and then it'll give you the connection information, which is server, database, username, and password, everything you would need in order to connect there. And what's great about this, what's great about the fact that we're running on full SQL Server, is that you can actually connect any application that you want directly to that database. So you could do If you really like Crystal Reports and you do where you're reporting with that, you can connect that straight to the SQL database. If you want to create some nice charts and graphs with Excel, you can connect that directly to it. You know, or if you have some sort of custom .NET application or something like that, and that can connect to the SQL server as well and run it just as you would expect. Yes? Say again? So the question is, do we support write operations? The answer is yes. And what's nice is that you can choose whether you want to enable read-only access to the database or read-write access to the database, or both, and then they would have different credentials. You can also say there's also options for from my location or from any location. So that means just, do you want to limit it to that IP address? Or I think from my location, I think, is like a short set of IP addresses or something like that. Or do you want to open it up to anyone else? So you have some good management there for how much you want to open up that database. So just to show real quick what you can do with this, I've connected Excel, an Excel workbook, to that SQL database. Let me show you how you would do it real quick. So you can just go into the file menu, and you see the SharePoint URL here, the server name, database name, and here's what I was talking about with managing the connections. You just click here, and in this case, we've enabled read-write connection, but you could also enable a read-only connection if that's what you want. And here's the two options that I mentioned for the location. So then once you've enabled it, you just click View the Connection Information, and it's going to give you the server, database, username, and password. So if you have a connection string or maybe you're going to store the connection in a file or something like that, you can use this for that. So in this case, I've already hooked up Excel. It's a little bit boring, I guess, to show the whole process of how to connect Excel, but there is a link in the deck if you want to know how to do it. We wrote a blog article about how to do it. Basically, the key thing to remember is that when you go into the data tab and you click from other sources, you might be tempted to click from SQL Server, but that's not going to work because it's assuming a master database, and ours sort of just have GUIDs for the database name. So instead, you want to use the from data connection wizard and step through it that way. That way, you'll be able to specify the database name as well. So this one I've hooked up, and I'm just going to create a pivot chart on this data. And so I want to chart the date versus the quantity to see how it's been going over time, and here I get a nice little chart very easily, live data that's updating straight from the SQL server, and I can see how it's been going over time. So I can see right away, apparently I had a pretty bad day on May 1st, and then it's been a bit of a cycle since then. So that's just one example of what you can do by connecting straight to your SQL server, but this is a really powerful feature that should open up a lot of possibilities. To recap, you basically just open up that connection in the Access File menu, and you have a few different options there. Then you copy that connection information over into whatever application you're using. In this case, it was Excel. And you can specify lots of things in that, too, like which tables you want to connect to and all that kind of stuff. You'll see all the tables, too. Keep in mind that you're going to see all the runtime tables and everything because the form definitions are stored in SQL just like the actual data itself. But you probably won't want to actually do any you wouldn't want to work with those forms that are stored there. And then whatever kind of reporting you want to do. You can also do reporting with the classic Access reporting system. And there's a button right here to make it very easy. You just enable the connections and then you click Create Reports. And it's going to create an ActDB file, a desktop database that's automatically linked to that SQL server. And so then you can just use those classic reporting tools if you want to. You could also just create a custom form in your app that shows sort of the report that you want, and then anyone who uses the app can view that. So I've mentioned that Access Apps are apps for SharePoint. Sometimes there's a bit of confusion between apps for SharePoint and apps for Office. So to explain the difference, apps for SharePoint are fully functioning apps that run on the web within SharePoint, and they're hosted on the web. You have a few different options how you can host them. You can build them with Visual Studio, or you can build them with Access with no coding required. Apps for Office, on the other hand, are add-ins of functionality that are currently supported on a few of the Office programs, Word, Excel, and Outlook. And so those sort of show up in the task pane, or for Excel, you can have it be on the workbook itself. And those, often they connect to a web service or that kind of thing. So that's the difference there. Since Access apps are apps for SharePoint, they are available in the SharePoint store, just like any other SharePoint app. So just to prove that that's the case, I'm going to go to my SharePoint site here and click Site Contents, Add an App, just like anything else. Here, when you click Add an App, you're going to see the ones that are available that your company has made available already. But you also have this link on the left to go to the SharePoint store. If you want to. And so there you're going to see all the third-party apps that people have made. But some of these apps are Access apps, so if I just search for Access, I should be able to get a few results. And yeah, you can see a few Access apps that people on our team have built here. So a meal delivery app, training management, the tool tracker was built by a guy on our team for a client of ours called McKinstry, who does construction. And they had a need to track all of the various tools that they had. They were losing them. It was costing them a lot of money. So with this Access app that he built, they are able to see if the tools are checked out, where they are, who checked them out, history, bulk check-in, bulk check-out, using a barcode scanner, all sorts of cool stuff. And what's nice is that the guy on our team was able to package that app up and put it in the SharePoint store, so now anyone else can download that to their SharePoint site. And then what's great about Access apps, unlike all the other SharePoint apps, is that you can then customize them as well. So if someone had a similar need, in fact, the tool tracker is general enough that it could really track anything. And so if they just want to track their assets, they could download the tool tracker and just change a few fields, a few of the forms, that kind of thing, and it would be a perfectly fine asset tracker. So I'll show a list of a few of the other apps that people on our team have developed later, but I just wanted to give that note. There was a question yesterday about whether it seems like someone could just, you know, download an Access app from the store that someone else has put there, customize it a little bit, and then repackage it and upload it to the store. And so we added a locked feature so that you can lock your app so that it can't be edited, which also helps with upgrading as well, because if the users change the schema a bunch, then it's going to be hard for them to upgrade to the new version of your app. So that's a little bit about the SharePoint store, just to show that we are SharePoint apps. A little bit more about the packaging process that I mentioned. You basically just go into File, Save As, and you can save it as a .app file. And that's going to contain all of the form definitions, all that, and then you have the option to even include the data as well. So this is great for if you want to copy the app and put it on a different SharePoint site. Maybe you just want to move it, or maybe you want to you have an app that you really like and you want another one that's slightly different, so you just copy it, you package it up, install that, and then modify that one from there because yours was a good starting point or something like that. And then this is also how you would create a package file to upload to the SharePoint store. And so you might want to put a little bit of sample data in there and include that data in the package, or you could just have the app definition by itself and publish that to the SharePoint store. And this is what that would look like, is you just click Save As App Package. It's very easy. If you're wondering about migration, there's a bunch of different sources that you saw on that Add Table screen that we support. If you have a desktop database from a previous version of Access, you can import that. What it's going to do is it's going to import the data and the relationships between the tables, but all of the UI that was created for that desktop application is going to instead be replaced by navigation that's auto-generated based on the data. So the UI that's generated just like those table templates, that would happen when you migrate an Access desktop database as well. And of course, Excel, SQL Server, and you can also do read-only linking to SharePoint lists, not read-write. A little bit more about that. You can do forms, lookups, and queries with SharePoint lists, and this is an actual linking. It's not going to mirror it or cache it or anything like that. It's going straight to the SharePoint list. But it's read-only right now, and you can't do data macros. The SharePoint list, it's going to be a SharePoint list within the same site collection, of course. And it's also just a point to mention that the SharePoint lists are the only data linking source that we currently support. So if you want to directly link to like OData or OLEDB, we don't support that right now. So just to wrap up, to remind you that the desktop databases that have been around for a long time, they have a lot of rich functionality that's been developed over the years, a very big ecosystem that's developed around it. People, you know, have developed their VBA, and that still works, and it's all fully supported in Access 2013. We've also introduced the new web apps, and what's great about them is that you don't need to know any code other than the macro builder, which is fairly simple, I think. And these are run on the web, very easy to collaborate, very easy to share, very powerful and scalable as well. If you're wondering about Access Services 2010, What we did in that release was we allowed the tables to be stored in SharePoint lists, so the data was actually SharePoint lists. And that was a feature that we introduced in 2010, and those applications will still work with Access 2013. And then, as I mentioned before, you can also migrate the data and the table relationships to a 2013 web database. It would move it into the SQL Server backend if you want to do that. These are just some examples of Access apps that we've people on our team have built already. So I worked on an app that the legal team needed in order to track all of their attorneys that they use for outside counsel. So they had just had in a really messy Excel spreadsheet before, and now they're really easily able to browse through, see all the attorneys, all the information about them, contact information. They were even able to do we were able to hook up a ratings feature so they could rate the different attorneys. And these are some others as well. It's very impressive that I'm very impressed that we were able to make this app that the entire Microsoft Office division used to reorganize all of the employees that when they did sort of a shuffle. So that was very cool. Shameless plug for this book that a guy on our team, Jeff Conrad, just finished, and I think it's just going to be published in the next few weeks. And this is a great resource. Anything you could ever want to know about Access 2013 is in this book. He knows absolutely everything. I read some of the book. It's great. And so please check that out. You've probably seen this before. We've been at the Microsoft Solutions Experience all week. And so please check out everything else in the conference. And please, please, please evaluate this session. Fill out those forms. I would really appreciate it. So thank you, everyone. And now I have some time to open it up for questions. Yes?
Is there any language support so that I can provide different labels, label in German, label in English, or maybe data in German and English?
So the question was about languages and what kind of language support there is within the apps itself. And so I would say keep in mind that you're sort of designing the app yourself. So you are going to be writing the labels and those kinds of things. So you can write them in whatever language you want. I believe if you have the settings in a certain language, then it's going to default to that for all the generation, all the auto-generation, for whatever you have it set as by default. But then if you want like multiple languages or something, you could write those out yourself. Yeah. All right, any more? Yes. So the question was, the SQL on the back end, is it going through SharePoint somehow, or is it separate? So it's separate. So the like the SQL databases on the back end, they're separate from the ContentDB and things like that. Each application has its own database in the SQL Server. But yeah, they're separate because that's how you're able to connect straight to the SQL Server. You don't really need to go through SharePoint. Normally, the permissions to the database would be managed through SharePoint, as far as like viewing the app, using the app, that kind of thing. But when you use that feature that I showed about opening it up, then it's using those credentials that you get from that to connect straight to it. Yes, it needs SQL Server 2012. Thank you. Are there any more questions? Yes. So the question is, could you make like a field read-only, or could you hide a whole table based on the user's permissions, that kind of thing? There are ways to hook that up. I would suggest looking online and at various resources. It's not like natively supported, really, for like table-level or row-level permissions. Like, that's not a feature, but you can hook up like macros and stuff like that to get the information about the user and then show or hide the view depending upon that user's permissions. So you can hook it up. I've seen it done before. Like, there was a asset tracking or like a computer tracking app they made, and then if you were an admin, it had one view where you were seeing all of the computers, and if you were not an admin, it just showed you the data entry about your particular computer, that kind of thing. So it is possible. Get the book. Any more questions? Yes. So I mentioned that we have a new feature coming, which just to explain that a little bit more, we are moving to like a more agile process, so we're really happy that we're able to push out updates a little more often than before. You don't have to wait for like the major releases. But your question was about when do we get the updates on premises? I don't actually know. I think you would get them rolled up into like service packs, the same as before. So there's a service pack. Actually, I don't know if I'm allowed to say when the service pack is coming, but there's a service pack coming, and it'll roll up everything that's been released before that. Yeah. Any more questions? Good one so far. Well, anything else? If there are no more questions, thank you all for coming.